The film salon began in 2002 with the screening of Citizen Kane and has grown into El Paso's longest-running classic film series. Screenings in the Wrestler Hall Chapel are very intimate, but with the arrival of a certain theater chain, there's a big change coming. I'm Kyle Alvarado. Here to talk about this exciting change for the film salon is a man you're already familiar with, On Film host and film salon founder, Charles Horak. Morning, Charles.
Good morning. So it's a little strange being over here.
I was going to say, you've hosted this show for a very long time. Gosh. You've never been on
this side. I think, Norma, we're coming up on 11 years. Some sort of anniversary, I'm sure, but I don't think I've ever sat over here and been interviewed on my own program, so thank you. Thanks for taking the weight off me this week.
Oh, no problem. Anything I can do. So there's a big announcement for the film salon.
So about a week ago, this is a long time in coming, but we rolled out several announcements, the main one being that the film salon, after more than 14 years at Trinity First United Methodist Church, a great home for us, is actually moving and going to be partnering with the Alamo Draft House Cinema that a lot of El Pasoans know opened recently, just a few months ago. And this is a great opportunity for us to expand our audience and watch on a much bigger screen in 4K, beautiful digital projection. And if people are familiar with the Alamo, they know that there's drink and food service there. So, and I think the most comfortable seats in town.
Yeah. Well, on top of it, it's probably the best cinematic experience in town. You know, you're not dealing with talkers or texters.
Right. You know, they really are fanatical about the communal experience of watching a film. And that's really one of the things that got me 14 years ago to start the film salon was I had been watching some great films my whole life, but typically at home and alone. And, you know, when you see something wonderful, you wish you had shared it with someone so you could talk about it. And that was kind of the genesis over 14 years ago of the film salon was to do an experiment on along the lines of a book group. And could you put together an audience to watch a film, to discuss the film afterwards? We have a I try to do a brief introduction before the film, sometimes not so brief. I'll have to trim that down for Alamo's sake because I know they're going to have a late show after our screenings. But, you know, what I envisioned 14 years ago, starting out not knowing that this would go year after year after year and we'd be here so many years later, was to curate a collection of films that if somehow you were able to go to all of those screenings over whatever length of time the film salon would run, that you would have a pretty good foundational educational background in cinema. So we program a number of classic titles from the pantheon of the cinema that a lot of people maybe have heard of. You mentioned we started with Citizen Kane 14 years ago. You know, I find that a lot of people know that Citizen Kane is a film they should see, but a lot of people have never watched it or had the opportunity to see it, particularly with an audience. And I think that's one of the cool things we do at the Film Salon is develop a community. And it was a perfect pairing and partnership with Alamo, who's all about community. Yeah. You know, they don't just talk the talk. They really walk that walk. And I think people have seen from the screenings they're doing already, not just the big Hollywood theatrical releases, but a lot of special programming that's happening over at Alamo and partnering with local nonprofits and other groups. They really are reaching out to our community. And I was so delighted to work with them.
So the film that we're starting off with is John Huston's The Treasure of Sierra Madre, which is part of the Tough Enough series.
Right.
Do you want to discuss a little bit about what this programming is about?
Right. So at the Film Salon, what I like to do is program out 4 to 6 months ahead, and we typically focus on a theme for the next block of films. And oftentimes we'll drill into the work of a particular director or an actor or a genre. In this case, I wanted to do something a little different, which I've been thinking lately about really classic film pairings and doing a series of a director and an actor that work together over a certain period of time. And I hit upon this idea of the Humphrey Bogart, John Huston partnership. These two men worked on 6 films together. They were close friends in real life, had a fairly similar world outlook. And 4 of those 6 films, I think, are among Bogart's greatest films. And so we started this collection. Our last film at Trinity First last month was The Maltese Falcon, which was their first film together. It was the film that would make Bogart really an A-list Hollywood star. He had worked in Hollywood for over 12 years already, but his star had just never quite ignited, and he was kind of on the downside again at Warner Brothers, but this film really took off. It was also John Huston's first film as a director. He wrote and directed The Maltese Falcon. So as you say, coming up on July 2nd, we're going to be screening The Treasure of the Sierra Madre to kick off our new partnership with the Alamo Drafthouse. That'll be Saturday, July 2nd at 7 p.m. Mm-hmm. I encourage people to get there a little early because they have wonderful drink and food menu, get their orders in. But as we go forward, we're also going to be looking at, on August 6th, at The African Queen from 1951. Bogart and Katharine Hepburn and John Huston and company all took off to Africa to shoot a lot of that film, and there's some really remarkable stories coming out of that production. It would be Bogart's Oscar-winning performance. And then we're going to wrap things up on September 3rd with Key Largo from 1948, a great film noir that stars Bogart, and he shares the screen with his beautiful wife, Lauren Bacall, one of their classic screen pairings, but also an amazing cast with Edward G. Robinson playing a mobster. He had worked with Bogart back in the 30s at Warner Brothers, Edward G. Robinson being one of the big gangster actors there at Warner Brothers. And so it's great to see those two on screen again and really having a great back and forth. Lionel Barrymore is in that film. So that's September 3rd. So basically over the next 3 months, we're going to be looking pretty in-depth at how these two titans of Hollywood, the director John Huston and the actor Humphrey Bogart, worked together and how they were able to make such amazing work together.
It's odd. I guess I never really considered The African Queen like tough guy cinema, but it'd be interesting to watch it sort of with that approach to it now.
Yeah, the title of the series, Tough Enough, was one of the interesting things I think about Bogart is if you watch his films, he is tough in all of those films, both ethically and morally and physically, but he was a small guy and he almost never has a gun and he's almost always in dangerous situations where his life is in danger. And if you know that this film, The African Queen, you know it's sort of an Odyssey film where Katharine Hepburn and he have to make their way across a pretty treacherous part of Africa in a small beat up small steamship and eventually take down a German ship on a big lake. So it's an adventure yarn. It's the two of them who don't hide at all their age in the film. Yeah. I think one of the wonderful things about The African Queen, it really shows both those actors in middle age and dealing with the physical difficulties of their journey, but also the mental difficulties of it. So that toughness that I'm referring to is not just about the classic tough guy image. I think one of the things that set Bogart apart in the 40s when his star rose was that he was tough in a different way than audiences had seen in the 30s, and audiences were ready for someone who was going to be smart and use their wits and a little bit of restraint. You know, you can always see the wheels turning in his mind. He was a fantastic actor.
And Katharine Hepburn's good, too.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, she is. She's a great foil to Bogart.
You had mentioned that you wouldn't be doing On Film if it wasn't for Film Salon. What's the backstory there?
Well, that's an interesting aside, but it was a big leap for me over 14 years ago to stand up in front of an audience and introduce a film, particularly one like Citizen Kane and the films that came after that. It took a while to get comfortable speaking in front of an audience and introducing these films and talking in depth about these films. And it was a few months into the Film Salon that I got an email or a phone call from Cynthia Farah at the time, now Cynthia Farah Haynes, who was the originator of this program On Film many, many years ago. And she invited me to come on as a guest to talk about this new film series that I just started. And I said, no. It's that's much too much. I'm still getting used to talking to a live audience. I don't want to go on the radio. But she kept twisting my arm, and one thing led to another. And several months down the road, I finally came on the show, and we talked about the Film Salon and what was going on. We struck up a great friendship over the years, and that developed into multiple guest slots on this show On Film. And then somewhere along the way, she was splitting her time between here and Kansas and called one day and said, would you guest host, not just be the interviewee, but be the interviewer. And I said, oh, no, not at all. That is a completely different skill set to sit on that side of the microphone. But she's a very persuasive person, those who know her, and tenacious. And one thing led to another, and I started filling in for her when she was out of town. And, of course, the rest is history. About 10, 11 years ago, she turned it completely over to me. So I can't believe where the days go. Norma still looks the same as she did 11 years ago, but my hair has turned white. But I credit the Film Swan. If it weren't for that first small steps with this film series, it just opened a door in so many ways, not only for this program, but through this program and the various film festivals I've helped create and put on over the years. This passion for watching movies has really turned into something almost like a vocation.
Mm-hmm. So what's next for the Film Salon?
What's next for the Film Salon is, because we had a small chapel down at Trinity First, I was never really focused on building our audience. We always had between 30 and 50 people. It was a beautiful community that had built up around it almost by word of mouth. But just recently, because we're moving to the Alamo and we have larger spaces that we can grow into, we've just updated our website at filmsalon.org. People can go there and subscribe to our mail list. We've got a refreshed – we just launched a Facebook page, which in this age is where you've got to be, a Twitter account.
It's a necessity.
I know. So you can find the Film Salon all over the place. And we're coordinating closely with Alamo, who have been so gracious to give us this first Saturday slot, one of their prime slots really in their own schedule, and a 7 p.m. slot at that. We're working closely with them. They've got their own community. We've got ours. I think the two will merge together. Hopefully we'll bring in some new folks and build the program. So that's really the focus now for the next 6 months or so, is just getting the word out about the move and seeing if we can't grow our community.
Yeah, audiences have been very receptive to the Draft House, and I think they'll embrace the new Film Salon with open arms.
And the Draft House has been really receptive to retrospective work and repertory titles. I know Philippa Solis coming up just tomorrow on Sunday is going to be hosting a screening over there. The Draft House is showing The 7-Year Itch for Marilyn Monroe's 90th birthday celebration. So, the Draft House has a commitment not just to contemporary cinema, but to cinema in general. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be a great partnership.
So typically the Film Salon screenings are free. Is there a slight change to the
– There is. Because it's at the Draft House now, which is a reserved seating situation, we're asking a nominal fee of $3. People can go to their website and reserve seats. That's one of the cool things about the Draft House, is you can actually pick the seat you're going to. You can, of course, go to the box office as well. But I do encourage people to go to Alamo Draft House, their website, or to filmsalon.org, where we'll have a purchase ticket button that'll take you straight to the page at Alamo Draft House. Nice. So making it easy. But just $3 for an amazing film on their huge screen, comfortable seats, food, and drink.
And 4K projection.
Absolutely.
I've been talking with Film Salon founder and your regular On Film host, Charles Horak, about the partnership between the Film Salon and the Alamo Draft House. The partnership moves the salon from its regular location at Trinity First to the Draft House, located at 250 East Montecito Drive. For more information on the Film Salon, visit filmsalon.org. The change in venue begins with a screening of John Huston's The Treasure of Sierra Madre on July 2nd at 7 p.m. Tickets are $3. On Film's producer is Norma Martinez. Archived On Film programs can be found at ktep.org. I'm Kyle Alvarado. Thanks for listening to On Film.